you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Thanks very much for tuning in today. Yesterday, we spoke a little bit about some of the things that, in my estimation, the Obama administration is going to do towards further gun control. It would seem as though the gun control measures are gathering a lot of steam. As a matter of fact, in Washington, D.C., we have a couple of ladies from New York State, that are going to introduce what I refer to as the counter-assault weapons ban, because it's not going after fully automatic guns. It's going after semi-automatic guns. Now, keep in mind, in Washington, D.C., you have a New York representative by the name of McCarthy. Now, she runs on a strictly one-issue platform, and that is gun control. This is a lady whose husband was killed on a commuter train between Manhattan and Long Island many, many years ago. She got a hold of her representative at the time and asked him to introduce some form of anti-gun legislation. He refused, so she ran against him and won. She served 14 years now. This is her seventh term that she's in. So 13 years. And she works specifically on an anti-gun platform. She's going to be reintroducing the assault weapons ban, the counter-assault weapons ban, as I refer to it, as we would refer to it, into Congress next week. Now, we already have H.R. 45, which has been introduced, which is as unconstitutional or illegal as can possibly be. This, I'm sure, will try to fly in the face of Heller. Additionally, she has a new friend who used to be very strong pro-gun, who's now not done quite so much. This is the junior senator from New York who's come in there actually by appointment. And with her appointment, her name is Kirsten Gillibrand. And Carolyn McCarthy has done her very best to swayed Kirsten Gillibrand to be as anti-gun as she can be, and actually had her co-sponsor a couple of bills in the Senate, which would be otherwise anti-gun. So Kirsten Gillibrand has turncoated. She's gone from being actually getting the very top rating that the NRA will give a legislator to dying off quite a bit. The NRA is hoping that she will not co-sponsor this assault weapons ban in the Senate. However, having proven over the last 3 months to be so wishy-washy and undergone this anti-gun transformation, who knows? Who knows what she's going to do? Hoping in one hand, filling the other one up with a mess of fertilizer and see which one fills up first. I don't have any hope whatsoever that Kirsten Gillibrand is actually going to do the right thing. My estimation, she's probably going to co-sponsor this same bill. Again, we'll see what happens next week when it's introduced. These two ladies from New York are going to try and grab the guns of everybody across the United States. So for those of you who are afraid of the potential gun grabbers, we've got at least Carolyn McCarthy that we can look at, and possibly Kirsten Gillibrand in the Senate, both from New York. We'll see what happens with this. Not very good news. There's other anti-gun measures going on. When we come back from the break, certainly something about what's happening in Mexico now being affected in the House. So stay tuned. We'll be back.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443. Uncle
Sam taught him to shoot me. Okay, welcome back from the break. Here is another attack on our guns. Now, a House committee is going to debate guns and the Mexican border, all right? So let me read you this story. This is coming out of Washington, D.C. The House Judiciary Committee heard plans Wednesday for increased gun control inside the United States as a means of cutting down on drug violence along both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. Here's a quote. How many officers have been killed before we impose more gun regulation? Asked Texas Representative Jack Lee, a Democrat. Now, Jack Lee is a little different than the average Texas legislator. He's anti-gun, where most of them are actually pro-gun. Coming from the heritage of Texas, I don't know if this guy Jackson Lee is. It sounds like a Southern name, Jackson Lee. Who knows? We'll see. Democrats have called on better gun control to be had within the U.S., which they say supplies 90% of the firearms seized in Mexico. Again, a bunch of blah, blah, blah lies, contributing significantly to the violence. Mexico itself enforces strict gun laws where residents are limited to non-military, low-caliber guns, with long prison terms for gun violence, as well as the guns have to be stored at an organized, approved, state-approved, and mandated range. Republicans on the Judiciary Committee argued against gun control in the U.S., arguing that Mexican officials need to do more to stop the smuggling of guns into Mexico, when in fact, guys, keep in mind, I'm going to come off this story for a second, it's generally all of these sales that the State Department, through the direct commercial sales, the DCS sales, going into Mexico and other southern Latin American countries, and through corruption, is actually where they're getting all of these guns. In the last 2 years, Mexican President Felipe has actually conducted a campaign to reduce the power of Mexicans, which has been accompanied by a surge in the number of violent deaths related to drug smuggling. Now, imagine that. You get the government going in there, and they're trying to stem drug violence, but it gets worse because there's a backlash. And now, all of a sudden, as we've said in the last couple of months, it's become a problem with Americans that own guns. So they're actually considering, in the House Judiciary Committee next week, they're going to consider taking the guns away from you and taking the guns away from me, to lessen the crime in Mexico. Now, it says along both sides of the borders what they're talking about. There's been very, very little crime, drug crime, violence crime, up and down the American side of the border because of this problem. It's been almost entirely contained in Mexico. So if we've got violence in Mexico and they want to curb that violence, how is it that taking the guns away from you and I is going to curb that violence whatsoever? Do any of you have the answer? Because I certainly don't. I have no idea how that's supposed to work. I just don't get it. Take away my guns, and there's less violence in Mexico. You know, I think if you actually remove the profitability of the Mexican drug cartels, you might be better off. Where are they getting the drugs? Are they being grown in Mexico? I mean, are they growing a bunch of pot? Are they growing the coca plants? Or is the stuff being smuggled in? If you attack these people at their source, you're probably going to have a much, much better opportunity at stemming any of this crime. By trying to take away the guns of Americans, now again, it's actually been not 90%, not even close. It's been 17% of the guns in Mexico have been traced back to the U.S. The vast majority of those are believed to have come through these direct commercial sales that have been approved through the State Department. Your federal government has allowed the supplying of these guns into that country, and then the corruption within Mexico has gotten those guns into the hands of the cartels. Do you really think the 100,000 to 150,000 soldiers for the Mexican military have left and left their guns when they just went AWOL from the military? Do you think they left their guns and their ammo? Or do you think they actually took those guns and ammo with them and joined the drug cartels for a much higher paying job as muscle and henchmen? Yeah, I think option B is pretty much where it's at. To consider anything else is just simply irresponsible. To come to the conclusion that taking guns away from us Americans is responsible, there's another bit of irresponsibility. And that irresponsibility lands on the hands of the American people that put these legislators in up on Capitol Hill and entrusted them to represent us within the, American idealism, to trust, to put our trust in these particular legislators that would, they would carry on the American ideals and support the Constitution and protect our liberties, which is what their jobs are. So it's our failure in putting these people up there. They then get on the House Judiciary Committee, and they're going to consider introducing legislation to stem our guns because of problems in Mexico. Now, there's famine in other parts of the world. Do you think they're going to pass legislation that limits how much we can eat or what we can eat so that we can try to balance this famine out? There's economic problems throughout the world. So is it going to be up to the people on Capitol Hill, up to our legislators, to actually pass some sort of spending laws where they can spend whatever the heck they want, but we've got to curb our spending and then send our money overseas? What do you think? I have no idea. Send me your thoughts at bill@2aradio.com later on today. Let me know what it is that you think. Sorry, I'm having to adjust my microphone right now. So here we go again with this whole thing and with this Mexico-U.S. border deal. I thought we had this thing licked, at least a decent thought of it licked. So here's the deal. We need to start contacting the members of the House Judiciary Committee. We need to look them up online, see who they are, and contact them. And let them know, look, this 90% is a lie, 17%. Check your facts. Violence within the United States is relatively unheard of on our side of the border when it comes to these problems. They're in Mexico. The 17% of the guns that have been traced back to the U.S., the vast majority of those, where the 90% comes in, is the 90% of that 17% are guns that were sold through the U.S. Department of State, through the direct commercial sales, and through corruption have ended up in the hands of these Mexican drug cartels, not through straw purchases along the border or at any other gun store in America and sent across the border. That is incredibly small numbers. Has it happened? Yes. And in my estimation, we need to find the people who purchased those guns, and if they're not already being charged with crimes, they damn well should be. Because there's no reason you and I should have to pay the price of those criminals. All right. Committee members noted that the violence has spread deep into the United States. The Tucson Citizen reported, for example, that in as far as the border of Birmingham, Alaska, 5 men were found dead with their throats slit. They had been electrically shocked before they were killed for a drug debt estimated at $400,000. So what they're doing now is they're trying to say the Mexican drug cartels have infiltrated as far north as Alaska. You can't get any northern than that when it comes to the U.S., right? However, it doesn't say anything about this crime. Are they sure it was the Mexicans or was it any drug debt? Maybe those drugs came from Mexico. Maybe they came from within the U.S. Maybe they came from Indonesia. I don't know. What they're doing is they're taking all these little bits and pieces and writing this story to try and support these anti-gun measures in the House Judiciary Committee. That's absolutely anti-American to me. That's socialist. It's working towards communism the way that they do this. Communism, they don't even ask. At least now in this process, we can call it only as far as socialism. If you think we're not in a socialist society, folks, just listen to stories like these. The United States has dispatched hundreds of extra agents along the border as it's searching all cargo trains for guns that are destined for Mexico, something it hadn't done before, said Acting Deputy Director William Hoover of the Department of Justice. Okay, so these hundreds is actually about 150. Most of them are ATF agents. And they're looking for stuff going south. Rather than drugs coming in, they're checking for other stuff going south. The Mexican government isn't checking for anything. But the American government is. This guy, William Hoover, told the committee that a high percentage of the arms flowing into Mexico come from Houston and South Texas. A high percentage. He wouldn't give the percentage, and the thing is he wouldn't give the numbers either. So, again, we have to just listen to the rhetoric that's being given by this guy, Acting Deputy Director William Hoover of the Department of Justice. Again, looking to stem the guns in your hands. Why? Because this guy gets a gun being with the Department of Justice. He doesn't have to worry about his stuff. He's got his own little claws stemming any arbitrary laws that would keep him from buying guns. He doesn't care. Guys, this is exactly what we're facing. We're facing this type of anti-American sentiment, anti-freedom. We've got a coordinated effort on the part of all of these people within the United States government that are on the Obama administration side trying to get your guns. We need to fight this. Stick with us. We'll be back right after the break.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, welcome back from the break. Thanks for sticking with me. By the way, call in number 800-313-9443. Okay, continuing on a little bit about this whole problem with the House Judiciary Committee going to meet on restricting our gun rights for the in an attempt to stem violence in Mexico. Now, keep in mind, at no time in history, through anything I have ever been able to find, has taking away guns or restricting gun rights reduced crime. I've never seen that. The reason is when people, armed citizens, become disarmed citizens, or subjects, as it were, criminals and the government, which, you know, kind of a synonymous term most of the time, criminals and the government can then do whatever they want without reprisal, because the citizens are disarmed. So that's what they've essentially done in Mexico. Since 1968, there's been huge, huge gun control. All right, we talked about this before. Huge gun control, and the violence is out of whack. However, everybody there owns a gun. The interesting thing also in Mexico is whether you own a small 22 caliber single shot handgun, that is on the same level as if you had a 50 caliber Browning machine gun, fully automatic. Okay, both of them carry the same penalty just because firearms purpose. Yeah, in general there. Guns are classified under one classification. They don't have like us, like a class one, a class two, a class three, and then have different natures of different crimes that they impose or penalties that they impose. It's all the same crime. And a lot of people there have guns. However, look at all this violence. Just look at it. So with this being said, Republicans on the Judiciary Committee argued against gun control as a unit in the United States, arguing that Mexican officials need to do more to stop the smuggling of guns into Mexico. So don't make it our problem, make it their problem. Let's see here. The United States has, we read that, dispatched these allegedly hundreds. I think it was 150 was the actual numbers. Texas Republican Lamar Smith commented, "Regrettably, some are using the violence along the border as justification for stricter gun laws," and he means that here in the U.S. Representative Ted Poe, also a Texas Republican, took a similar line. He said this, "It seems like Mexico has a responsibility in keeping guns from coming in," he said, "like we do with drugs." So if Mexican President Felipe Calderon wants to have the United States government have whomever watching the border in the U.S. and stop shipments, vehicles, people, whomever going into Mexico to stop things that Mexico doesn't want to have in their country, then wouldn't it be incumbent upon Mexico to stop everybody leaving Mexico into the United States for stuff that we don't want here, like drugs and illegals? If we could stem the flow of drugs and illegals, illegal immigrants, illegal Mexicans, illegal anybody coming up through Mexico, if we could stem that flow, something tells me we would probably be better off not having quite as many drugs and quite as many illegals in this country. But is Mexico doing anything to stem that? No, because that's the same Mexico, the same Mexican government that put out a pamphlet that was for free that Mexicans could get that essentially told them how they could more efficiently sneak into the United States and stay here hiding behind our little loopholes of laws. So I tell you what, with a tremendous amount of prisoners in the prison system here in the United States being from foreign countries, and most of the foreigners that we've got illegally in the U.S. have come from Mexico, something tells me that all the little loophole laws that they use to stay here in the U.S., all those little loophole laws should ought to be closed before they start trying to close any other loophole laws when it comes to guns, because we're going to want to be able to defend ourselves from these foreign invaders when they come here and commit crimes and end up in prison. So our economy has a huge portion of its tanking. I shouldn't say a huge portion or a huge percentage, because I don't know what the percentage are, but huge actual financial dollars tanking because we're supporting people who are in this country illegally, the vast majority of which come in from Mexico and are Mexicans. Not all of them, but a whole bunch. The U.S.-Canadian border seems a whole lot more secure than the U.S.-Mexico border. And I think part of that has to do with a little bit of a societal standpoint. You've got Canada, which is an organized country, import-export, more of a modern society. They've got more modern civility when it comes to laws and enforcement and such. Mexico, on the other hand, quite honestly, folks, like it or lump it, it is a third world country. And you don't have people there respecting laws, respecting wishes of people within this country. You don't have Canadians coming down here, flying the Canadian flag, playing nothing but Celine Dion, watching nothing but Pam Anderson on TV and all this Canadian stuff. They come down here, they assimilate into the American lifestyle. However, Canada's lifestyle and America's lifestyle are not too dissimilar. But the Mexicans, totally different story. They want to play their ranchero music, have us assimilate to them, and it's a big mess. Stick around after the break. We've got more to come. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, welcome back from the break. Now, here's a little bit more on this whole deal, right? Mexican warehouse exposes gun grabber cartel lies. U.S. guns and Mexican criminal syndicates have been frequent topics of late. Not because I have a special affinity for the relationship, but because the anti-gun government, anti-gun activists, and anti-gun media coalition, henceforth referred to as the gun grabber cartel, keeps forcing the spin on the connection down our throats. Before exploring new information, I'd like to recap where we've been to give an introduction to readers new to this and to refresh the memories of regular readers. Again, this is by a reporter. Let me see. Let me find his name. David Cordera. David Cordera wrote this. Okay. We talk about the unspectacular results of, quote, Operation South Belt Steel's interdiction efforts, where Mississippi law enforcement intercepted some rather remarkable guns and quantities, presumably en route from Atlanta to Mexico. Incidentally, no one else brought you this information. We asked, do 90% of Mexican crime guns come from the U.S.? Unlike others asking this question, this guy's analysis focused on the difference between when this claim is made to when it's parroted by the media and when the government actually testifies under oath. Continuing, we need explored how we're being lied to about the U.S. guns and Mexican crime, referring people who are listening to some people who actually crunch the numbers on this 90% bunch of BS. We then explore the role that U.S. government has played in arming the cartels with exports. No one really thinks they get military-grade automatic weapons from gun shops and gun shows, hopefully, besides useful idiots and mainstream reporters, but we're kind of repeating ourselves when we put those together. What's been discussed is about how the Department of Homeland Security, you know, the folks who think if you're a constitutionalist, you may be a right-wing extremist, repeats that 90% lie in its ironically titled intelligence report, right? And we tried it all in how the Obama administration is using this as an excuse to sign on to more international gun treaties that would impose more citizen disarmament here at home. Coming now to a new investigative report from the Associated Press, of all places, we're astonished because it is not the usual ignorant propaganda we've come to expect. The headline says it all. And let me read to you what this all is. I'm sorry, give me just 1 second. My computer's running a little bit slow as I pull up these notes. Okay, here is this Associated Press report out of Mexico City. Deep inside a heavily guarded military warehouse, the evidence of Mexico's war on drug cartels is stacked two stories high. Tens of thousands of seized weapons, from handguns and rifles to AK-47s. Rifles to AK-47s. It is a rifle, dummies. Some with gun sights carved into the shape of a rooster or a horse's head. The vault nestled in a Mexican military base is the government's largest stash of weapons, some 88,537 of them, nearly 90,000 seized weapons, seized from brutal drug gangs. The Associated Press was recently given rare and exclusive access to this secure facility. The sheer size of the cache attests to the seemingly hopeless task of ever shortening and tracing the guns, possibly to trafficking rings that deliver weapons to Mexico, and security designed to keep the guns from getting back onto the streets is so tight that even investigators have trouble getting access that they need. The warehouse on the main drag in a northeastern Mexico city near the horse racing track is surrounded by five rings of security. There are two military guards at the door, five more in the lobby inside. There are another 10 of sorts that clean and catalog the weapons. Some are dismantled, destroyed, and a few are assigned back to the Mexican military. Now, this would most likely be the ones that originally came from the Mexican military. The guns are stacked into two-story ceiling-high warehouse stacks. The warehouse is about the size of a small Walmart. The rifles lie on 22 metal racks and pistols hanging from metal poles by the trigger guards. The cave in this warehouse is impeccably clean. The only smell coming from the entire warehouse is coffee the soldiers prepare for their rare visitors. The clash of metal sounds and the soldiers at work echo off the walls. The security, bolstered by closed-circuit cameras and motion detectors, makes the warehouse particularly impenetrable, says General Antonio Estrado Monsivalias, who oversees the armory. Now, let me kick in my own little Bill Karn's thoughts here. This thing is only as secure as corruption or lack thereof will keep it. If at any point in time somebody offered these guys enough dough, they would allow some form of security breach. A camera would go down. Something would stop recording. They'd get in there. That's just my own two cents, speaking on the history of the way things have happened in Mexico. And all the military has 305,424 confiscated weapons locked in vaults, just a fraction of those used by criminals in Mexico, where an offense by drug cartels against the military has killed more than 10,700 people since December of 2006. But each weapon is a clue to how the cartels are getting arms and possibly the traffickers that brought them there. The U.S. has acknowledged that many of the rifles, handguns, and ammunition used by the cartels come from its side of the border. Mexican gun laws are strict, especially compared to those in most U.S. border states. The Mexican government has handed over information to U.S. authorities to trace 12,073 weapons seized in 2008 crimes, particularly on guns from large seizures or notorious crimes. But the BATFE, the ATF, which handles the U.S. investigations, is at the mercy of local Mexican police for the amount and quantity of the information. Many of these rural municipalities that may come into gun seizure may not even know anything about trafficking guns, says the ATF spokesman Thomas Mangan. Thomas Mangan. Now, let's keep that in mind, because if he's a spokesman now and he says anything that does not further the anti-gun stance of the Obama administration, he's probably not going to be a spokesman much longer. You're not supposed to be speaking the truth. You're supposed to be speaking their rhetoric. A police officer in Mexico submits a description, serial number, and distinctive markings of the gun. The weapons are then turned over to the military for storage in one of a dozen armories, such as this one in Mexico City. When U.S. investigators need additional details, as they often do, the request goes back to the original police officer, who must retrieve the gun from the military vault, sometimes hundreds of miles away. Mexican police must ask permission each time, blah, da, 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 da. All of this stuff is basically talking about how convoluted the system is for getting any of this information to U.S. investigators so that they can see. Now, keep in mind, not all 305,000 of these guns in Mexico, or the nearly 90,000 at this particular warehouse, are being given to ATF for any sort of trace. The reason is that the Mexicans can tell by looking at the guns that they obviously don't come from the U.S. They only give them the information that does. So they said 305,000 were in these warehouses, and last year they gave 12,000 to almost 12,100, 12,073 to the ATF to trace. They were able to trace about 6,000 of them, and of that, about 5,100 actually came from the U.S. So how is that 90%? That's not even 50% of the stuff given. And if you take the 6,000 that were given and the 5,100 that were, I'm sorry, the 6,000 that were traced and the 5,100 that were traced to the U.S., that's not even 90%. It's about 84% for those of you math wizards. I just don't get it. All right, moving on. We're going to forget about Mexico for now. I shouldn't say we're going to forget about it. We're just going to move on for now. It's ridiculous to me, this whole thing, that they're using international pressure, international activities to try and stem guns from you and I. Okay. Yesterday, we spoke a little bit about this whole terrorist watch list. Now, this terrorist watch list is something that is created through different branches of the federal law enforcement agencies. And it's people that they put on some erroneous list, and it's called the no-fly list. Now, the guy who happens to be the Secretary of State, I'm sorry, not the Secretary of State, he is the Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, of the Obama administration, spoke to the Brady campaign. And when speaking to the Brady campaign, this is just last month, he said that anybody who's on this no-fly list, this terrorist watch list, shouldn't be allowed to buy a gun, just automatically. Now, the government creates this list arbitrarily through whatever information they get. And once you're on there, it's almost impossible to get yourself off. So here's a little story for you. There's over 1 million names, 1 million records on the government's combined watch list. Of those 1 million, there's really only truly about 400,000 unique records. The others are, here's the deal. The U.S. government's consolidated terrorist watch list has exceeded an estimated 400,000 unique records of known or suspected terrorist identities, according to a Justice Department report released just, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago. The controversial list, according to the report issued by the Office of the Inspector General Audit Division, is a combined database of various federal law enforcement agencies administered by the FBI via its terrorist screening center. So the FBI really has to do with creating this list. As of December 31, 2008, 1.1 million records existed on the government's combined watch list, according to an inspector general. That number, however, includes duplicate files and aliases and do not reflect the actual number of individual people on the terrorist watch list. That's more like 400,000. They estimate that as of December 9th, 2008, that the total number of unique individuals on the watch list was approximately 400,000. Okay. The report is the result of an investigation by the Audit Division and discusses findings related to three objectives. Okay, here's one of the objectives. Determine whether the subjects of FBI terrorism investigations are appropriately and timely watchlisted and if these records are updated with new identifying information as required. Two, determine whether subjects of closed FBI terrorism investigations are removed from the consolidated terrorist watch list in a timely manner when appropriate. And three, examine the FBI's watch list nomination practices for individuals that were not associated with current terrorism case designations. Now, keep this in mind. 1.1 million names on there for 400,000 people. That's essentially three names for every one person who they believe rightfully belongs on there. What about the rest of the names? If someone on there by the name of Bill Carnes or William Carnes, that's an alias, all right? That means I can't fly. And if Rahm Emanuel got his way, I could no longer buy guns because of clerical issues. Now, how anti-American is that? I mean, how non-judicial is that? They want to bring terrorists in from other countries that we gather, that the military gathers in other countries, CIA gathers in other countries, bring them to the United States and give them all the rights and privileges of a citizen of the United States when it comes to court proceedings and such. But yet the actual citizens who have rights, they want to take them away once their name gets on this list. So imagine, pardon me, imagine if we have someone in the Obama administration decides that they want to just totally hose someone who's a U.S. citizen. They just call down the pike, get a hold of Eric Holder, and have Eric Holder get a hold of the people at the FBI and say, add this person to the terrorist watch list and do it now. Within about a half an hour, somebody's going to be on the list. Then they no longer can fly. And if Rahm Emanuel gets his way, wouldn't be able to buy any guns. Now, you don't think that this dirty sort of pool happens? You're wrong. That's what happens. That's the way things go down. So listen to this. James Moore, a Texas journalist who wrote two searing books of former Bush White House Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove, found himself included on a no-fly list, a component of the combined terrorist watch list, and has not been able to get his name removed. It is unclear why Moore was listed and why he remains on the list, but Moore told Raw Story Reporting that the list hasn't made anyone safer. The terrorist watch list is an icon for government malfunction and abuse, Moore wrote in an email message this past week. Politicians can seemingly nominate their enemies for the list or have it done by proxy using their bureaucratic influence. And the lists are maintained using outdated matching software that is incapable of finding discrepancies in all of the various data formats used by the federal agencies. The list has made a lot of work for a lot of bureaucrats, but it hasn't caught a single terrorist or made anyone safer on American, I'm sorry, hasn't made a single terrorist or made safer one American soul. So 51 51,000 people as of March 2004. Now, we're talking over 5 years ago. 51,000 people have filed for a redress request claiming that they were wrongfully included on the watch list. That's 51,000 people as of 5 years ago when this list was only about 2.5 years old, maybe 2 years old. Okay. Because from 9/11 until they actually started creating this list, you know that there was a large gap. The government just is not that efficient. So we probably have, of those 400,000, I'm guessing somewhere around 100,000, 25%, maybe more, of people who have no business being on there. So of the 1.1 million people on there, maybe 250 to 300,000 ought to be on there. And if everybody knew, there'd probably be more people filing for redresses. But yet these people can fly. And in addition to that, if Rahm Emanuel, the chief of staff for Barack Obama, had his way, would not be allowed to buy any guns, simply because they're on some sort of arbitrary list. But again, terrorists brought over into this country to be charged and tried for terrorist activities against the United States would get all of the rights guaranteed to U.S. citizen. But U.S. citizens who were born here that have these rights, have not committed any crimes, but somehow end up on this list, would somehow lose many of their rights. We have the right to travel. We have the right to travel freely, but being on this list takes it away. Sorry to say, guys, this stinks to high heaven. We need to get a hold of our senators and congressmen and let them know that the FBI has got to handle this problem and handle it efficiently so more Americans are not hosed, because you and I could be on the list. Stay tuned. More after the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Karnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, guys, here we go. A pair of realistic drills Monday tested the ability of Chico, California police and firefighters to deal with an active shooter in a public place intent on inflicting as many injuries as possible in a short period of time. The first drill at 6 a.m. brought emergency personnel to the Chico, California Mall East 20th Street. Police, including SWAT members, found civilian, quote-unquote, victims already suffering from pretend gunshot wounds. During the process of working their way towards the imaginary shooter, officers also sustained wounds. Some victims were fitted with artificial hands and wrists, which bled a red liquid into the mall floor, adding to the realism of the drill. Police Lieutenant Linda Dye said that the drills simulated environments with real-world possibilities. Quote, "These situations evolve rapidly and require a rapid and dynamic response from police officers in the field," Dye stated in a press release. When police sought to eliminate the threat from the shooter, fire and medical personnel were responsible for formulating a rescue evacuation plan, then triage the injured and transport them to the local trauma center. The drill at the mall concluded before stores opened. The second drill at noon presented emergency responders with a similar scenario taking place at the Enloe Medical Center's road facility. Chico Police Lieutenant John Carrillo supervised the drills, which also included the officers from the Chico State University Police. So they're being proactive. However, I've got to tell you, just from looking at some of the photographs and hearing that they had SWAT members there and such, when there's an active shooter, the police are going to find out about it. The actual cop on the street, the fastest that they are going to find out from the time the first bullet is fired, the responding cops in the neighborhood, within that sector, within that beat, are going to find out maybe 2 minutes later. Then they have to respond. For SWAT to get there, for SWAT to get a call out, guys, we're talking 20, 30 minutes. So this active shooter drill, you've got to realize that's where armed civilians would stop something like this in a public place. Because for the cops, from the time the first shot gets fired till the police arrive, at the very, very quickest, if they are right there and the call goes quickly, 911 goes, the dispatcher gets there, now we're talking maybe 3 or 4 minutes at the absolute best case scenario. And I got to tell you, 3 or 4 minutes is a huge, vast amount of time to go down before you can actually get somebody who's shooting. So I like the idea of what they're doing. I just think that it's a little bit misplaced. With that being said, it is armed civilians within the United States of America, good, honest, law-abiding Americans, armed and trained, that will stop crime and criminals who are hell-bent on causing death and serious bodily injury to further whatever reason it is they're bringing it to us. That's you and I, armed and trained. Any effect from the U.S. government, state, local, county authorities to curb that should be considered a threat to our sovereign abilities to do that. I'm Bill Carnes. This is 2A Radio. Thank you for spending your day with me today.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The 2A Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.